we don't have to rely or contract ourselves to only look to the state or governmental institutions to give us what we need.
Hello, and welcome to the Emergent Strategy Podcast, hosted by the Emergent Strategy Ideation Institute. We are a collective of facilitators, mediators, trainers, and curious human beings interested in how we get in right relationship with change. Today, I'll be guiding our interview. I'm Mia, our facilitator of healing in residence and Mason of Abundance. Emergent strategy is the way we generate and reshape complex systems and patterns with relatively simple interactions. And today I have the great fortune, pleasure, and truly, I think I might have, you know, outmaneuvered, outplayed, outbid, did all the things to make it possible so that I could be the one doing a Daku Uta in this episode. So we are joined by Daku, who is co-creating communities that are invested in taking care of each other instead of taking advantage of each other. Through their healing practice, they apply abolitionist and healing justice principles to transform violence and grow our individual and collective power and resilience. Adaku is a sixth-generation Igbo healer, rooted in healing our relationships across time, generation, lineage, and identity. And honestly, I'm going to let Adaku tell you more of their story, but I think it's important to note that Adaku has been deep in the throes of ensuring that although our country is doing some we can say that on this podcast, it's ours, some fuck shit around abortion. Right. Adaku is making sure through their work at the National Network of Abortion Funds that people still have access to fundamental health care. So with that, Adaku, welcome.
Thank you, love. What a gift to get to be here in this portal with you. I feel like playful energy and a lot of joy in my heart whenever we get to share space together, and feel often very inspired by how you move and how you hold so many of us. And I'm hyped that we get to do this together in this moment.
Me too. I know, I'm like, oh my goodness, there's so many ways. I'm so excited. So thank you for agreeing. Well, before we get in, I want to ask you first how you are right now. How you feeling? How you doing right now?
Yeah, let me drop in so that I can answer from the most authentic place. I feel... yeah, there's a lot of excitement and giddiness up in my chest. There's a lot of warmth in there. And I feel the tiredness behind my eyes from being stretched in so many different directions the last couple of weeks with a lot of mobilizing and organizing that folks have been doing so brilliantly and powerfully. I feel my feet on the ground, which is always a good sign. And I'm noticing that even more as I'm calling it to my awareness. And that in this moment indicates to me that there's some ground that I feel too. I'm feeling held. I feel very held. I don't feel alone out here in these streets, which has happened before. I felt alone before. And in this moment, I feel very intact and connected.
That's so beautiful. Feels so important in this time, and makes sense both in terms of the practices that you create, that you have, that you create, that you, the ways that you move, that you would not feel alone in this time. And I love that you are feeling that.
Yeah, and also people snatching me.
Okay.
And my friends be like, oh, I see where you're going. We not letting you go in that direction.
Okay. All right. Thank goodness for friends who will catch you. Well, so before we get deep in, I asked you right before we started if you would be willing to center us, lead us through a practice so that we can all get in together. Would you be willing?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I accept practices feel like such soil for transformation for me, and whenever I can indulge in them, I have the capacity to, I often say yes. So thanks for asking. And thanks for being in practice with me, you, and whoever's listening now and into the future. So before we start, before I start any practice, I like to offer gratitude, Imela, as we say in Igbo land, to my teachers, specifically Alta Star and Mawalisa, who taught me this practice of centering that so many of us, including Adrian, often move with to ground and be inside of more of our brilliant bodies, our messy, magical, and miraculous bodies. So I want to offer them a lot of gratitude and the lineages of centering and grounding that this particular practice also stems from. So Lucille Clifton, Black feminist sci-fi writer, I often bring her into this space, you know, talks and invites us to celebrate with her that every day something has tried to kill us and has failed. And so take a moment and just notice how your life is winning right now, how you are alive. What are the ways that your body is letting you know that you are here? So that could be through sensations. It could be through how movement shifts in your body. It also could be pain that you're feeling that is telling you that you have some boundaries that need to be heard. And we honor the body as the body is, not trying to fix or change anything, but from a place of deep compassion and curiosity, like, huh, okay, today in this moment, this is how I'm showing up. Good. Check out your emotional landscape as well. How are you feeling? And see if you can answer this as honestly as you can. So many of us have had to lie in order to survive. And so we default to saying ways that we're feeling that are actually not true. So just notice, how do you feel emotionally? And do those feelings have a home somewhere in your body? Great. So with all this beautiful noticing, let us organize ourselves on purpose, really supporting our bodies in extending down to the ground through our legs. So feeling the feet on the ground or whatever support is holding your legs up, just feeling that connection there. And seeing if there is any part of you along your vertical line. So from your feet through your legs, your torso, your chest, through your head, that wants a little bit more space for you. Can you extend into your dignity without overextending and causing more harm? Noticing where you can trust gravity a little bit more, a force bigger than us to hold us where we need. Great. As you take your next inhale, just notice how your rib cage expands with you as your body breathes you into the next moment, into the next future. And see how much space you can take up from side to side. Some of you might want to expand your hands like wings up and down. You might want to bring your shoulders back and also down to make more space for your chest left to right. Many of us have been told that we're too loud, too radical, too wild, too much of something. And we say that we are enough. Just make some spaciousness for that enoughness from left to right. Getting as wide as you need to welcome where you are and how you are. And then leaning into the back body, feeling for whatever surface that we might be leaning on and letting ourselves be a little bit more supported. Seeing if our muscles can rest on our bones. Trauma and oppression tend to tighten up the muscles so much. Can we trust the love of the bones? And at our backs, we have lineages of organizers and healers who have prayed, danced, loved us into the future. See if there's an ancestor or transcestor that wants to come back to with you, stand side by side with you for this conversation. Invite them in the ways that you know how. Good. And in your next breath, just feeling for our back body and feeling the organs, lungs, heart, kidneys, belly, colon, and letting that next breath take you to the front side of your body. If you want, you can place a hand at your heart, noticing 5 heartbeats that are offering gratitude for your own existence. From this place, remind yourself, what do you care about? What do you long for in the world? And who do you need to be right now and into the future to make that world possible? Hold that vision and let that vision seep into your body as much as you can. Let it keep shaping, moving, inspiring you. And thank you for being in this practice. Thank you for what your body knows.
Thank you. I love that. So lovely. No, thank you. I mean, I'm just sitting with in that practice as we were ending, and I was sitting with what my longing is. I have this really beautiful tree outside of my window that I love deeply, and I know the tree loves me back. Loves so many. And you know, I think I've just been in this kind of deep conversation about how do we build enough connectedness, enough interdependence, so that this tree can survive, so that generations can have a relationship, and that we honor what the possibility is for that, knowing that we are moving in a way that isn't actually about any of our collective survival. And so anyway, I appreciate that moment to like breathe into the intention and to visualize what's possible. Should we all recognize our connection and move from that place of connection so that we can survive together and thrive? So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Adaku.
Ashe, may it be so. Across species, right? Yes. Not just humans, but also that the tree that you're looking at and all the trees and the ocean and the red dirt and our four-legged furry friends. Yeah, this interdependence extends to all of these different life forms.
Right. Yes, absolutely. There's no us without all of them. There's no them without all of us.
Ubuntu. Nope. Yes.
So Adaku, I did your bio some injustice, meaning like I know that I could truly go on for days here about the amazing things you choose to you know, bring your energy, your attention, your life force to. And so I would love if you wouldn't mind sharing a few. And I'd like for you to, if you wouldn't mind, connecting that to your political lineage, you know? So, you know, what are some of the core places, intentions, communities that you've chosen to bring your life energy? And how is that informed by, yeah, what you've learned, who you've learned from, who you see as your political lineage?
I really love this question, and I'm feeling really tender just feeling into it, because my life is such a manifestation of political lineages that were hopeful, courageous, and audacious. I literally would not be here without lineages of people and land that made huge sacrifices and commitments to a world where someone like me could exist. And I love that you asked this question. I'm really grateful for this question, because inherent in it is so many blueprints of people who have shaped my life, who knew change was possible and risked so much for me and for really for all of us to be here. So, you know, I'm extending a lot of gratitude to them for their labor, their love, mm-hmm. their commitment, and their courage. So I am the first child of Enyanya Uta and Stella Uta. And before I was born, my parents made a very politicized decision to give birth to me in the US and then raise me in Lagos, Nigeria, specifically this small town of Festac. Shout out to my Niger folks listening to this. And so much of that decision that they made was stemmed from both of my parents being survivors of the Biafran War, which was a civil war that broke out in Nigeria from 1967 to 1970, where Igbo people, our people, wanted to become their own sovereign nation from Nigeria and really separate themselves from British imperialism and ultimately self-govern. My parents barely survived that war. They lost home, some of their siblings and family members, and a lot of their sense of belonging in the world. My mom's twins literally were shot right in front of her. Both of my parents experienced a tremendous amount of suffering that they still continue to feel today and have passed on to my generation. And during that war, and thankfully, you know, we're feeling more of it and also healing more of it, which I'm grateful for. And we'll talk a little bit more about. During that war, land, food, and people were used by British and Nigerian fascists to punish and kill a lot of folks. And then on the flip side, there were a lot of Igbo folks, including my family, where land, food, and people were comrades in healing and protection during the war. They were able to survive because of the networks of people who kept them safe, you know, folks who were able to teach them how to defend themselves, folks who taught them how to make their own medicine, folks who taught them how to build temporary shelter in the forest and how to organize to remove state patrols from different villages that they migrated to. And my mom's grandmother was with her the whole time, and she was a community herbalist and witch. And before, during, and after the war, my mom learned so much about plant medicine that saved her, and she passed on a lot of that to me. And those medicines have also saved my life many, many times. And their experiences during the war planted such a deep commitment in my parents mm-hmm. to increased safety and collective care in our community, and has been such a huge inspiration for me for so many commitments that I've also made in my own life. So my dad started a security company the year that I was born, and it still exists to this day. And in true Virgo fashion, it's called Serve Trust. They train people.
Yes.
We are going to serve the people and build more trust in our communities. And yeah, this organization trains up folks and provides security for organizations across Nigeria and Ghana. And then my mom started a Pentecostal church called Eternal Spirit Church. And very Capricorn. Shout out to Capricorns and the Virgos.
I mean. Okay.
So her spiritual community doesn't exist as a church anymore because she got politicized and said, you know, fuck you to Christian supremacy, and reclaimed our Igbo spiritual lineage and practices. And still to this day, she holds spiritual space with community, especially with survivors of sexual and domestic violence and survivors of war like herself. And with folks like me, younger folks like me in the next generation. So growing up, I saw so many examples from my parents and Igbo community of just navigating really violent and horrific systems and simultaneously figuring out a way to survive with what we had and really with each other. So whether we said it out loud or not, somewhere in us, we believed, this lineage believed, that another world beyond suffering was possible, and we could build it and are building it still. And in order for us to build it, we need each other. There's this Igbo proverb that says, "Otu onye tu izu, obu egbe ochu," which loosely translates to "knowledge is never complete, and two heads are better than one." And it's a proverb that would constantly be shared in our home, just how, you know, reminding us that we're never stuck, there's always more to learn, even in the face of a lot of insurmountable violence and chaos and contradiction that can freeze us, that there's always more. And part of how we grow our capacity is getting together and doing that together. So I take a lot of inspiration from this lineage and feel very accountable to being in integrity with it as I carry the work and the love forward. So other pieces, you know, also growing up in Nigeria, my family had limited access to electricity. So we spent a lot of time outside getting dirty, playing in the mud, playing in the ocean, and learning a lot about plants as well. And I have a lot of visceral memories of delight and curiosity in relationship with land. I remember the first time I fell off my bike and I cut up my knee, and my mom grabbed some what's called onugbu leaves in a bush nearby. And she also made me this tea to drink, which was very, very bitter. And a few days, my wound was so much better. And I had a lot of experiences like this. And it took me a while before I was able to find my own relationship, more depthful relationship with land and medicine. And I'm grateful for my mentors and teachers who have helped to deepen that inside of me over time. And even at a young age, there was still this like intuitive curiosity of, oh, there's a lot of love that exists beyond this human sphere, and I'm connected to it in some way. Another significant piece of my political lineage that informs a lot of the work that I do stems from growing up with a variety of chronic illnesses, specifically pneumonia, malaria, depression, and ADHD, and Lyme disease 4 years ago. Another like consequence of playing out in the forest, probably where I wasn't supposed to. And
I mean, Lyme is a teacher, but
It's like there are ways that nature and animals share boundaries with us. Like, don't be going up in this place. That happened and impacted my body in a lot of ways. And not just my own body. I'm also one of the primary caregivers of my brother, who has been diagnosed schizophrenic. And from an early age, our bodies have had to navigate hospitals that were harmful and violent, and also had to navigate healers that would force all kinds of medicines on us that we did not consent to or didn't understand. And so even till this day, I still feel some fear going to the hospital because of what my body remembers over time of how, as a dark-skinned, Black, non-binary, queer person, I've been treated in hospital spaces. And hospitals, the medical industrial complex, have been really painful places for me and my family, where we've had to conceal parts of who we are to get some of the care that we needed the most. And I grew really intimate with my body because of the pain that I experienced, and also the sexual violence my body encountered multiple times. And I still have these vivid memories of just like trying to navigate the medical industrial complex with my parents, and simultaneously also having my mom share some strategies and some medicine and some plant wisdom with me around how to take care of myself with what grew around us. And being inside of those two contradictions really expanded a lot of what I thought was possible around care, that care did not have to be an isolated experience that only existed in an institution, and that care didn't only have to be given. You know, it is something that gets to be co-created by the cellular organizing in our bodies, and also the relationships that we have in our communities. All of this legacy has brought me to where my organizing, healing, and teaching work lives in right now. So mm-hmm. I'm the organizing director at the National Network of Abortion Funds. We're a network, a large network of close to 100 organizations at this point, autonomous grassroots organizations that are working to make sure that folks are able to have access to abortion without the barriers, the logistical, economic, political, and cultural barriers that get in the way. And we're also organizing at the intersections of racial, economic, and reproductive justice. Mm-hmm. I also get to throw down with a beautiful, powerful, loving crew of healers and organizers through Harriet's Apothecary, Healing Justice Collective. Yes, based here in Brooklyn, but we have folks all over. Been around for, gosh, almost 9 years now at this point, and you know, following the legacy of so many of our ancestors, including Harriet Tubman, and recentering healing, wellness, and safety alongside abolition work. And I get to also teach with BOLD, Black Organizing for Leadership and Dignity. Some of my just like closest comrades who have been in practice with me for a really long time exist in that formation. And I'm grateful for our contributions to helping to build a powerful and coordinated Black left in this time. And I love my community. I live on Lenape land in Brooklyn, Crown Heights, super close. I love that we're close to each other. And one of the things that I really love about this neighborhood is it's actually not too far from one of the paths of the Underground Railroad. And that feels really palpable in this space. And it's a very migrant. Lots of migrants live in this community. So folks from Nigeria, Haiti, Jamaica. And one of my political practices is, you know, getting to know my neighbors, you know, and learning what they're up to. And there's a lot of political formations that are happening on this block that are also sites where I get to extend my energy, my life force energy towards. Yeah, the other day we were signing petitions to get more support around this park here, to support how it gets cleaned up and cared for over the seasons. And young people as like little as 5 were holding down petition and walking from door to door, which was just so beautiful. So those are a couple things, a couple sprinklings of lineage, and it's wide. it's so wide and deep. Thanks for inviting that question. It's, yeah, I feel tender. I'm a keeper of the moon, and she'll never be
gone. Revelations coming true, blowing smoke rings in the dark. I held on to only you. Can't start a fire. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for living into it. And thank you for carrying forward what you've learned through all the experiences. Yeah, to bring healing, to share love, and to bear witness to who we are. Yeah, I'm struck. I remember, I think one of the first times I experienced you was through a Harriet's Apothecary like a gathering. It was like one of the seasonal healing spaces that you all create. And I remember being like, just floored, like, wow, this person is, it's clear that you are speaking from a place of connection, purpose, and an honoring of what your ancestors and people have gone through, bringing that to the fore, like really honoring their experiences enough to be purposeful and clear in this moment with your energy and your intention. So I just want to say that I appreciate and hearing some of that, you know, I think it's a real gift for us to be able to hear some of what you and your people have gone through in order to bring you the black unicorn magic that you do.
Thank you for seeing. Thanks for seeing me, love. And for seeing us, because I really do believe that I don't move alone. Even in the times when I forget, there are folks who move with me. And what you illuminated so beautifully also comes from them as well. So I claim that for myself. And I also feel the ecosystem that I'm a part of that extends through time.
Mm-hmm. Well, so to that end, it'd be helpful to hear, you know, because you shared many of the places where you have the opportunity to practice and the places where you get to throw down and extend what feels like this really beautiful intersection of like protector, healer, warrior, like medicine. Yeah. What are you practicing? And is emergent strategy showing up in your practices right now?
Hell yeah. yeah. Emergent strategy is showing up in all the places and practice. Gosh, it's just so vital. I said this earlier, but they feel like the soil of transformation. Our liberatory intentions need to be planted and cared for over time so that they grow abundantly and as they need to. And I really believe that without practice, we move away from what we long for, what we value, and automatically sometimes start to adopt ways of being ourselves and each other that have harmed us for generations. So practice is such a vital piece of how we change. And emergent strategy has offered so much shared language and practical tools around how we do that. So I want to share some really beautiful things that are happening on an organizational level at the National Network of Abortion Funds. And then I'll share some things that are happening in my body and in my space. This work of abortion access that the National Network of Abortion Funds has been doing is part of just a ancient and futuristic work that has been happening over time. When I think of the crisis and attacks that have been happening in our reproductive landscape, you know, we know that they are part of generational strategies of surveillance, criminalization, confinement, and control. And they are part of legacies of work to isolate so many of us from our bodies, our communities, and our collective power. And one of the gifts of this network, we've been doing work for the last 3 decades, is because a lot of these tactics of violence, strategies of violence are so generational, we've been paying attention to the patterns of attacks and violence in our communities and institutions, and really been bold and audacious in taking action and preparing for a future that isn't just focused on securing legality, but really cultivating these networks of care that will support folks outside of the state. And that work is just grounded and fortified by centuries of resilience and collective power that will keep disrupting reproductive oppression through time. And I see interdependence as a core emergent strategy that we've been leaning with for some time now, because we know that in the absence of systemic care, in the presence of systemic violence, we are the ones that are going to keep creating safety and care and security for our people. That is why we exist. That's why this network was built. That's why we do the work that we do. Another world is possible, and we're proof of that. Like, we don't have to rely or contract ourselves to only look to the state or governmental institutions to give us what we need. So we've been practicing for close to 3 decades now, you know, connecting hundreds of thousands of people to compassionate care and making abortion a reality beyond these state and federal barriers, and really reclaiming our own autonomy and sovereignty. And folks are hearing about abortion. Some folks, I wouldn't say everybody, but some folks are hearing about abortion funds for the first time. And for folks who are like, who are these people? These are, you know, folks who live in our communities who are taking folks across state lines to receive the care that they need. They are banding together to gather millions of dollars that are raised from the community to make sure that folks are not having to use their rent to cover a procedure. Abortion funds are folks who are meeting people who need abortions at gas stations to fill up their tanks, and offering transportation across state lines to the nearest clinic so people can get access to care. They are also opening up their homes for folks who've been forced out of their communities, queer and trans folks who've been forced out of their communities, and housing people so that before, during, and after their care, they have a place to land. They're also translating medical information and offering babysitting people's children as they're going through their procedure. And I think one of the most fundamental and powerful things that abortion funds do is offering just deeply compassionate care to people when they need it the most. And when folks come, reminding folks that we see you, we believe you, we got you, and we're right here with you. And this is really, really critical direct service work that's been meeting so many urgent needs for many years. And the network has also recognized that only doing direct service alone does not get us to the liberation and justice that we need, particularly for Black, Indigenous, and people of color. So we've been organizing and mobilizing in coordination with a lot of this service delivery that we offer across state lines. And, you know, organizing across multiple intersections. So folks are also organizing for thriving wages and abolishing ICE at borders and making sure that our people have gender-affirming care and safer conditions for sex workers and land sovereignty. And that feels like, and it's been so adaptive and emergent, because some of the attacks that we're seeing right now on a state and federal level, we've known that they're coming, and some have just, for me, like, taken my breath away. It's just, how is this level of violence possible right now? And I know it intellectually, and just the amount of restriction and violence that's happening is significant. It's really significant right now. And so because we've had so much practice in coordination and trust building and doing this specifically relational work with folks who've had abortions across a variety of different geographical locations, the kind of care that we're able to offer is more aligned with what people need, and not in isolation. You know, we're partnering with independent clinics, we're partnering with herbalists and doulas and midwives. We're partnering with folks across movements, you know, to make sure that care is more possible and more palpable. So shout out to NNAF and my comrades out here.
You know, they call me the Night Queen, 'cause I live in the dark.
Shout out. Thank y'all. I love that. I keep resonating with something you said in the beginning, which is like co-creating the care that you need, you know, and as you're speaking about the, you know, the both the intersections of the struggles, right? The ways in which one needs to be able to ensure that there is access to quality care, that someone can meet like the care that affirms them and that supports them and is a reflection of them, and that it takes us to have, you know, a sustainable world to be inside of that. Like, I just, you know, a place without all the unnecessary prisons that are created and access and barriers to our care. So I love that. I love the model of service delivery connected to organizing that is so deeply rooted in, I think how our people have come to organizing really in this place, in this country.
Right.
And that you all are continuing that in the face of what are really steep and deep attacks in this time. So I think we're all sending our love, our energy, our light in your direction for this critical work at this time, knowing that, you know, was it not for an abortion fund, many of us would not be leading the lives that we are now. Well, so I know you're going to also talk about your own practices that are applying to your life because, you know, So what are you practicing for yourself? How's emergent strategy showing up in your life? Maybe even your love, you know, we want to hear about it, Adaku.
I love how you just casually drop that up in there, my love. Gosh, so many different ways. So I think one of the consequences of having parents who lived through war and also, you know, moving through this world that is highly oppressive is a survival strategy that I can lean on very much is dissociation, which has saved me so many different times. I didn't grow up in a home that liked to talk about feelings and just like moved away from it. It's like, what's the practical thing that we need to do to get the shit done and make sure that our people are okay? And I think oftentimes when people meet me, they're like, oh my God, you've been in your body, feeling your feelings for quite some time. And yes, I have put a lot of work into it, but it's a deep, continuous place of practice for me. It's mixed, like, you know, it's like all practices, different seasons, we connect to it in different ways. So dance. So my mom would say that I've been dancing before I could even talk. Like it has just naturally felt like the easiest place for me to express what is most true for me. And there are a lot of you know, ancestral prayer and ritual that comes through dance, particularly from Igbo lineage, and that I'm reconnecting with now. And dance wasn't, while it was a place that was like a very freeing place for me because of the direction that it took in my life earlier on towards like more performance, there was a lot of trying to be and move in a way that wasn't unique to my own body. So a lot of my relationship with dance and also my relationship with my body has been just like relearning who is Adaku in this time, in this moment right now. What do I feel and what do I need? And dance in this moment, because it's so wild and freeing, like in this time, it's not connected to like a 5, 6, 7, 8 choreography move for me right now, even though there are moments when that pops off. But now it's just about intimacy. It's about what about myself can I discover that I haven't known? I haven't known. What are the parts of, where's grief hidden in my back or my throat? Where do I get stuck when I start moving my body in a particular direction? When people ask me to do certain things, where do I freeze or try to fight? And having a dance practice that I often do in the mornings, and if I can, I try to get to the ocean where I can bring some of these questions with me and see and feel into how my body moves. And sometimes I'll be doing a meeting. I just like turn off the video and just let what I am absorbing have some place to move and not have to be trapped somewhere. And trying to understand what else is here, what else is alive, rather than, you know, moving towards dissociation, which has been sometimes safe place for me to land. So dance, my altar for sure. I try to sit here every morning or right before I go to bed, and I have pictures of beloveds, friends, and family members. And also I have a piece of brick from the last building that Harriet Tubman lived on upstate that a friend gifted to me. And a lot of other reminders of how connected I am to more than me, more than my lineage, more than this lifetime, that there's so much more, and we're all in some way working together towards a future that we long for. And you asked about love. I am opening up my heart again to falling in love. I am a serial I was going to say monogamous, but I'm not just a monogamist, you know, I also practice poly when it feels safe enough to do so. And I've been inside of just serial long-term relationships over time, like 6, 7 year relationships back to back. My Venus is in Pisces. I love, love, I love relationships. And I also get absorbed by them and can forget pieces of who I am and some of my childhood trauma, like so many of us, pops out up in there. And after my last breakup, which was at the beginning of 2020, I made a conscious choice to be single for the year, just be really recenter the relationship with myself. And find out what love means to me now on the other side of some really big heartbreak, and, you know, having like a whole future mapped out with someone, and it changes in really significant ways. And it was heartbreaking. It was really heartbreaking as breakups tend to be. And I didn't want that heartbreak to to make me not believe in the abundance of love. And it was starting to, especially around the time of the pandemic, just like giving everything that was happening. Mm-hmm. So I didn't take the whole year off, but I took most of the year off, and was single and met someone who I'm with now. And the pace of our relationship is significantly different than relationships that I've had in the past. Meaning that we don't live together. I'm not trying to get married to them right away, which I wasn't trying to do, but you know what I mean? It's just like, we're going to get close really fast and make really long-term commitments to each other. And this person who I'm seeing, Wazi, who I love really deeply, is in such a deep, their own practice around healing, and that is both like present in this time and also healing their own intergenerational work, where in a way that they can just see me, we can see each other clearly because of the healing work that we've done, more clearly. And there's less projection that comes from just how trauma can have a lens around love, you know, and what's possible. And because we see each other so clearly, it's allowed for more ease. So much so that my body's still learning how to just trust and lean into it, because it's a kind of ease that I've longed for a really long time, but I haven't felt on a cellular level in this kind of way. And there aren't any, we don't have any commitments to each other long-term. You know, what we have is like a commitment to being really honest and really good and kind with each other, and a commitment to learning more about each other beyond what we know. And if it's like, if we're only together for, we've been together for almost 2 years, it'll be 2 years on Black August, which is wild, but if it only lasts for 5 years, it only lasts for 5 years, you know, and in that time, we have these clear commitments of practice to one another. And I feel really grateful for that. I feel very, I feel grateful for you, Wazi, if you listen to this. And they're just a very tender person who cares. Their care is very wide. Like it extends to them and also extends outward. And their masculinity as a trans man, I really appreciate how much they're, not just in therapy, but with their friends, like interrogating, like, how is their masculinity showing up? Is it coming from a tender place? Is it creating more spaciousness for other folks to be more of themselves? And yeah,
I love that. I mean, you know, I'm like, so I love. Oh my God, I love. But also like more, you know, genuinely, or just as, thank you for sharing. And I'm like, okay, good. Note to folks, note to self, you know, like it's good when, you know, everybody's doing their own work. Everybody got to be doing their own work. And two, I really like this. I'm like, maybe I'll, you know, plant the seed in liberation times. Maybe Black August is auspicious.
I definitely test girls around Black August around love, so
I'm like, you know, there is something too, like having a liberatory practice that is about love.
Yeah. It is.
And letting it be is one of our pathways, yeah, to liberation. And it's starting first with you. You know, I really, really honor this of like, as someone who can, you know, who can hold, you know, what it is to be a serial relationshipper. What it takes to turn that love, to self and to center self inside of that, particularly because I think as people who center care, it's easy to really understand the way that we are resourced and love on others, you know, fills us in a particular way. And so here it's like, oh, and one must also center the love, the romance, the connection with ourselves in order to then, you know, be able to invite what we want from others. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I think I want to ask you, like, and have us just close on, like, what's the most resonant question for you in this time? Like, what are you sitting with as?
Oh, gosh, most resonant question. It feels like so many questions. As a Gemini moon, I often have lots of questions.
Yay, Gemini moon! Love that curiosity.
That curiosity and just making those connections. You know, one of the questions that keeps me up at night is, how do we sustain the relationships that we need to meet the depth of the changes that we need to make across generations? I like all of organizing work, living on the planet, like all of it boils down to relationships for me. And like the quality of our life right now on the planet is a reflection of the kinds of relationships that we have with land and with our neighbors and with the young people in our lives and with our bodies. And we've been taught so much from the time we're in somebody's womb around how to relate or how to not relate for all kinds of reasons, whether that's to keep ourselves safe or belong or to fit in or to have power. And I sometimes get worried, you know, I get worried about, oh my goodness, relationships in order to sustain, they require work, you know, they require a lot of work, and hopefully that there's ease and joy that's filled into it. And it also requires a depth of work, even as conditions are changing and we are changing. And as that change happens, can we sustain? And I'm not talking about, you know, we stay in relationships that we need to let go of. I think that's also part of the relationship arc, is knowing when to complete a relationship. Complete it for forever or come back again. I would not be here without the relationships in my life. And when I look at all the organizing work and the political spaces that I've been a part of, the moments where we have won or people have felt more of themselves and felt collective power is when our relationships are really strong with each other, you know, whether or not the purpose is clear, but it's like, oh, these people, these are folks that I trust. These are folks that I care about. We care about each other and we are as authentic and reliable to one another as we can. And beyond, also be obviously beyond human beings. It's like, I think often of just like what's happening to the climate and how much technology takes us away from, and other things, and fascism and globalization is, you know, taking us from really intimate relationships with land. And we have such a sacred responsibility to restore, restore this kinship, across species and across generations. So that's my question is, yeah, how do we sustain the relationships we need to make our dreams come true? You know, our dreams of interdependence, of liberation, of justice, and repair where we need to.
What a beautiful question. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, I'm going to sit with that for a while. It feels, you know, it feels deeply connected to questions I'm asking myself, so. I do want to ask if there's anywhere you want folks to be able to go to, you know, continue to either throw down with you to know about more about what you're up to, or, you know, or to give some energy to some of the amazing work that you have given your life force to. Where they go? Where they go, Adaku? Where should people look?
Yeah. So if folks are, you know, have capacity and desire to support the work of Abortion Funds, definitely visit us at abortionfunds.org and find your local abortion fund in your state. Get connected to local and national organizing work that's happening. And also, if you have that coin, give to folks who have been doing this work for a really long time. And yeah, you can also find resources there. There's a lot of information that can be confusing around the landscape right now. There's a lot of resources there on our website as well. You can also find me at Adaku Uta website. My website, I'm also on the interwebs sometimes. I try to be, when I'm not working, I try to be off the computer as much as possible out here on these streets. And hit me up if you see me. Approach me with love. I might not respond, but if I do, I will respond back in love.
This podcast is produced by Natalie Peart. Music for the Emergent Strategy podcast is provided by Hooray for the Riffraff and their album, Life on Earth. To support the ongoing work of the Emergent Strategy Ideation Institute, please make a donation at alliedmedia.org/ESII.